This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
And welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is finally Thursday, November 28th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today. Today we have a treat for you. Today we're going to talk about the State of the Union. Sounds very American-ish, eh? No. We're going to have a State of the Union. Actually, I have a distinguished guest today, Bernard Evans, right? All this time, I thought he was still head of the union, but no, he has moved. He has moved, and he has a new title. Let me make sure, state his title. You're funny, entertaining, when union heads move on to be consultants for the government. And I was wondering, is that a betrayal to the union movement? How can you say that you are a union man and you work for the government? Today, Bernard Evans is the senior consultant at the Labor Relations Unit. And we're going to have some discussions about that because he was instrumental in signing that big MOU, right? That Memorandum of Understanding between the Joint Labor Movement consisting of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas Trade Union Congress and the National Congress of Trade Unions Bahamas and the Progressive Liberal Party. I always question, how can a union sign with the opposition? They have no power. That don't make no sense to me. But Bernard Evans helped facilitate that. So I'm going to have that conversation. This is the time when you call in and challenge Mr. Evans on, especially if you're a union man, a union woman, if you were part of the movement and you just didn't understand what Mr. Evans and associates we're doing. In fact, there's a number of persons saying, man, but see what they do? They sign on that and the government renege on everything. Nothing that the government promised them is coming to fruition. They frustrated, they mad, they vex. And I'm going to be asking Mr. Evans questions of that, whether the on this memorandum of understanding they have between the union. I also want to talk about the way forward, not the junk group. I want to talk about the way forward in terms of unionism in the Bahamas. Is there space for union, especially when union leaders are now crossing the floor and using, for my words now, the tricks of the trade against labor? Labor ain't getting no slacks because the union heads are now on the opposite side. I plan to challenge Mr. Evans on that. I want you to help me challenge Mr. Evans on that because there are some who now questions his integrity. And so he's here to talk about his integrity. He's here to talk about the labor union and the movement in general. And I want, before we start all of that, two questions. One, to explain your new role and your new title, Mr. Evans, one. And also a brief summary in regards to the labor movement in the Bahamas, because some people are saying that labor is limping. It's limping because of deals being signed that conflicts with the labor movement. And you are now a part of that deal making. So without further ado, I hope I didn't beat you too much, Ms. Evans. Bernard Evans.
Not at all, Mr. Nuri. As a matter of fact, I welcome, and please don't hesitate to ask all of the tough questions that you may perceive tough. I'm well equipped to answer all the questions. And so we stand by what we have agreed and what was set out in the MOU. And when I say we, I'm talking about union perspective as one of the signatories on the MOU. But I'm currently, as you said, the senior chief consultant in the LRU. The LRU was founded, I think, under the minister, Dion Folks, some time back. It was always sourced by former union executives. So this has always been a natural attrition. Let me just say this, too, about this notion about crossing over. Unions always felt that we ought to be in a part of government, deepening our democracy to ensure that labor views are at the table every stretch of the way. As a matter of fact, it was a labor movement, a former labor leader that caused and ushered in the first majority rule. So let's not forget that. That's the history. It's written.
That's when, before the PLP fired him and he had to go back to be...
But the point I'm trying to raise is it was the union that ushered in when it got its seat and it cast its sided with the then Progressive Liberal Party that formed the majority rule. And so labor was always a part of politics. If you look across the country, I mean, nations of the world, you look at Australia, New Zealand, England, you would have the Labor Party. Who form governments, and so we're not far removed. What labor fights for is exactly what government say they fight for. And so if you look at all of the achievements when it comes to workers, whether the Employment Act, whether it's the Industrial Relations Act, it has always been labor pushing for those initiatives for vacation leave, sick leave, paternity leave, any number of benefits that we have now that we currently enjoy that we take for granted. It was always the labor pushing for that. And so labor has its right place. It should be a part of government. So it's not a crossover. It's only contradictory when labor leaders go against unions. But you don't have that in the place, not with this LRU that I had right now. We are considered an extension of unions to foster good relations, to weed through as best we can, to speed up on and agree to clear up any ambiguities that may be existing. Within various government ministries. And so we see ourselves an extension of workers. As a matter of fact, when I was offered this, I told them, I'm never taking off my union hat. So you would never find any union leader who said that I have gone against the union. And so have my colleagues who helped make up the LRU.
I can let you repeat that. You're saying that no labor person can say that have abandoned labor.
Absolutely. There can't be any with merit to say that we have abandoned. We have been facilitating and agitating and continue to agitate for unions' rights and union advances throughout the government ministries. Okay. So we have been a blessing, really.
Good. So a brief summary on the state of unions. In the Bahamas, they seem to be divided, seem to be splintered. They seem to be at the beck and whim of, in this instance, the government. They get pushed and bullied, not necessarily the unions coming together to say, hey, this is what I need. This is what my people need. You mentioned Labour Party, and it doesn't exist in the Bahamas. It seems as if Labour people have capitulated to join the majority instead of fighting for independent rights.
No. Well, that's what it seems. But that's why we're here. And I don't know how much time we have, but this, and I pray that your listening audience will listen attentively and ask tough questions. Any ambiguities, like I said, not to be repetitive, but so we get to the root of this. But having this answer that question in the state of labor, I have to say that unions are progressing well. There are a number of new unions being formed. As recent as this year, at least two, and they continue to come asking for registration. And so union is alive. And I think what people miss, too, is you got to look at those who are unionized in this country. Some doctors, you're talking about doctors, the junior doctors, as we call them. You're talking about the pilots of Bahamas Air, the Bahamas Air workers, teachers, nurses, the public service. The Police Staff Association, the Prison Staff Association.
1 second.
Any number.
The Police Staff Association. I thought the police couldn't unionize.
No, they have an association.
No, I know they have an association.
But I'm saying, close as they can come to, Aaron, excuse me, as close as they could come to a union, recognized, registered union, because there are some, what they call essential services, can't unionize because of the safety of the nation, because they can't strike and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But they could form themselves into association, as the Constitution gives them right to do so, and advance collectively their concerns so they can be addressed. So that's the closest they could come to it.
It's the advance collectively their concerns so they could be addressed part that makes it so dangerously close to a union.
Yeah.
And many, right, like that you mentioned it is why I raised it, because many people right. have questions about why that particular entity is allowed to to exist and to operate the way that it does.
Yeah, because the Constitution gives them right to. Right? It says that people have freedom of association. It's just that a certain entity, once they have that association, they can't just strike.
Is that
a detriment to the country?
Is that association under the bodies that you represent?
I don't. Oh, let me just clear it up. Before you came in, I was letting them know that people still believe that I'm a part of the union, holding up an official position.
Mm-hmm.
But I've since retired from the union from 2018.
Okay.
I used to be the president of BCPOU, of course, and then became the president of the National Congress of Trade Unions, of which I am also under my time, we formulated the MOU,
mm-hmm.
okay, which we will talk to a little bit later. But currently, I'm just the chairman of the senior consultant of the Labor Relations Unit within the public service.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my official position right now.
All right. Right.
The Police Staff Association, as far as I know, is a part of the Congresses, as long as the Prison Staff Association.
Why?
They don't have voting rights or anything like that, but they do sit and
on the surface, it seems like they're a union, and on the surface, it appears as if they're operating like a union.
Yes.
And then within that union, they're operating services that should be operated by police officers in their official capacity.
Right.
But now I, as a private citizen, am paying police officers to do things that they're supposed to do in the conduct of their duties. I have to pay them to do them, and it appears as if this is something that's been negotiated from a position of the Police Staff Association, which boggles my mind, since the police force is not supposed to unionize.
I'm sure Mr. Ricardo Walks, I think he's the current president of the Police Staff Association, I think he's well able to answer those questions for you as to what you perceive or you put.
Yeah, from a union perspective, to know how does the union see them? Because is it that in an attempt to build your bargaining agency, you are willing to accept them as a part of the fold, right? It's something that requires tremendous clarity. Because again, here I am paying police officers to do things that they should be doing as a part of their duties. But I'm being told that this is a function of the Police Staff Association that technically shouldn't exist.
Yeah. I want to hold my tongue with respect to the inner workings of what it is.
Which of the Congresses should I approach? I was asking which of the union bodies would that particular association sit with under?
I think they may be split by now, and I could be corrected with that. But TUC, I think one, and NCTUB.
Okay.
Right, those two.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
That's where I would go for clarity.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's continue. You mentioned that you're a senior executive
consultant yes sir
in the labor unit, right? I want you to explain that your role, the objective of it, and how you assist unions in the public service. So people can understand what is your new role, because there are times when members of the public would construe that you now are thwart labor efforts.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
labor efforts that the government hired you to be that backbreaker.
Okay.
And I want either to spell it or you explain what is it that you do.
Essentially, my letter in substance just says that you are engaged to foster good relations with unions, to clear up the backlog with industrial agreements, some of which the last one signed since 2012. And we got to work right quick in looking at all those backlogs, all those union contracts that have not been signed up until 2021. And so we were successful in getting, I think, the number now stands at 30, 31. And so that is primarily our concern. Also, all of the issues when it comes to union being respected, personnel and human resource department that are charged with discipline and ensuring that the tenets of the agreements are carried out, we tried to be a bridge between the unions when they seem to have difficulty in getting their point across. That is where we come in and try to harmonize those relations. And so we would also make recommendations as per the Congresses and what they want, what they would like to see. And we advance them up to our minister, Ms. Pia Glover. And she has been very receptive. We've established quarterly meetings with all of the Congresses so that each affiliate via those Congresses could air their concerns with the minister directly. And where we can, we will also facilitate meetings with the Prime Minister office when it be deemed necessary that the matter has transcend that of the minister.
Let's now move on to, let me go to the caller first. And my question to you.
You have a caller already?
Yeah, my okay. question to you after the caller engaged, yes. right, is the objective of the memorandum of understanding that your organization did when you were.
After the caller?
Yes, after the caller. Okay. Because cool. you may need some time to flesh it out.
No, I already know.
And why you thought it was necessary to okay. negotiate, not with the sitting government.
Yeah.
Okay. With an opposition going to win the election. I'm going to let you respond to that after, because okay. Carl's been waiting for a while, but good. I want you to know that's what I'm coming to ask you.
No, no problem. Okay.
Go ahead, Carl. Can you hear us?
CA, good day.
Good day.
And good afternoon to your guests.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Let me first qualify myself, especially to your guests. Marvin Johnson, PCPOU, Shropshire, one-time chief Shropshire.
Stopper.
That's to qualify myself. Yes, stopper. That's personal. You know me personally.
Yes, but sir.
I must say that despite of all this linguistic gymnastics that my boy Bernard Evans, former president, and all of them, these new leadership is doing, the new leadership of these unions have failed miserably their members. And the reason for that is they are either compromised either politically or they compromise via having ties with the employee, with the employer. I have been there, I've been amongst them, and I have seen. And fellas like me, fellas shop stewards, have even up to the day will stand our ground when these fellas have come from the union leadership and then want to run for this party or come under their choice. There is a leader out there who needs to be thrown away ASAP. Of one of those unions, Mr. Ferguson, he has said on national TV and radio, I'll never forget it, as a fledgling shop steward, that he would never lead his union members against the Progressive Liberal Party in Russell Square. But yet, these kind of leaders are still out there parading all the big John Pender, all of them, compromise, politics, Shane Gibson, all of them. They'll fail their members miserably. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, let me let Mr. Evans respond to that and then go to my question after that.
Yeah, I know Marvin very well, like you said. And I can he called some names, and I think it may be better. You know, I don't want to engage in that. It may be probably a one-on-one or even get those gentlemen that he called and ask and kind of put some actual information to show this compromise so they can speak to it directly. But I'd like to get to this MOU.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks, Marvin, for your input, by the way. I hope you're doing well. Let's just say this much. It's not a document that was drafted for the Progressive Liberal Party.
It wasn't?
No, sir. The document itself, well, when we came together, the Congress, because you know we were divided and all that stuff at the time, we tried to come together and form, because it's better for all workers of all these Congresses, not to have, now we have three Congresses. But I believe in one Congress so that we can speak with, you know, definitively with one voice. I think we're stronger for that, and it's better suited for all of the members if we're able to speak with one voice. Having said that, the NCTUB and the Trade Union Congress led by Obi Ferguson, very able lawyer, we came together and we thought that after looking at all the concerns that we had, that we needed to formulate some kind of document to give to all political parties.
I can pause you there.
Yeah.
You're saying that you gave this document to the Free National Movement?
Also? All political parties, not the Free National Government. We went to the chairman of each political party.
How many parties?
There were three. But let me just go back to the genesis.
Yeah.
And so the Congresses, of course, we have all of our affiliates. We asked for a representative from each affiliate to be a part of this committee, the subcommittee, to go ahead and to formulate. Once they came back to the Congresses, We went through it. We detailed it, and we took out what was, we thought was, you know, a little bit too harsh or whatever it is. And then the committee, once we sanctioned it, we sent it to the chairman of the Free National Movement. We sent it to the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party. And we sent it to the chairman of the, I think it's the coalition. All right. We quickly got a call back from Mr. Lincoln Bain saying that he endorsed you. We got a call from the Progressive Liberal Party saying that they would like to sit down because some of the things we were asking for had legislative connotations or constraints. And then I think from the Free National Movement, we didn't get an invitation to sit down and meet to have this, to go over the MOU. So this notion that this was formed with the Progressive Liberal Party, no. The Progressive Liberal Party was one, along with Lincoln Bain and his group, had endorsed the document itself, saying that if they were able to become the government, they would engage and some of the stuff to be enlisted. So having said that, we had at least two or three meetings with the Progressive Liberal Party. I think at that time, there were Mr. Fred Mitchell, Mr. Zane Lightborn, and Madam Ms. Pia Glover. They came and they sat with us. A couple of things we went through, and they gave what they can. They agreed to certain things, and certain things they said would, like again, would require legislative change, stuff like that. So that was how the MOU was formed.
So when you realized that the FNM weren't interested in talking, right, why didn't you reframe the language in the MOU to represent a relationship with both whoever was in government and whoever would end up with
we invited them, we gave it to them, and if they had a concern, anybody, I believe, there was no apprehension on our part, or nor did we saying that, okay, well, we didn't want to meet with anybody. We just took whoever came and wanted to sit down with us to go through the MOU at that time.
Right, because, see, and...
So I don't want to say that we didn't, because if the FNM had said to us at that time, that you would like to change A, B, C, 1,
yeah, no,
2,
no.
3.
Yeah, I'm not.
We
right.
Don't have that. Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that the party should have begged the FNM to come to the table at all,
no,
right?
I'm
saying, why wouldn't you reword the language in the MOU to reflect participation of both the opposition, whoever that may be, and the government, whoever that may be?
Well, again, I think if we were asked, if I'm answering you, if I understand what you're asking me, I think if we were asked to reframe it or rewrite it or present it in a different way, I think we would have looked at it, but we were never asked to do so.
Okay.
We were never asked to do so.
So we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to take a quick break right here. I see you callers, you're waiting to speak to Mr. Bernard Evans and ask him some questions about, especially this memorandum of understanding between the union and the government. And there were a number of unions who did not sign up. I want to understand why they didn't thought it was necessary to join the Congress in regards to that. So we'll talk about that too.
And somebody became aware of the signing.
Yes. This is Guardian Radio AM. We'll be right back.
Wait, why you look so mashed up? Like clothes at the washer?
No, but just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking about everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
But it was serious. Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave his boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No, boy. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know who you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Pinder is carrying a new line of tile. The Sky series of porcelain comes in four colors. Sky Noir, Sky Azure, Sky Gris, and this one, Sky Glass. In this particular tile, I think you'll find coin gray, silver gray, cloud gray, and gray. All of these are seamlessly blended to make the Sky Glance one beautiful tile. The Sky series of porcelain comes in two formats, 24 by 24 at 530 a square foot and 12 by 24 at 525 a square foot.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, we have callers on the line, and I want to have them engage Mr. Evans, right? On the break, we had a discussion. I'm going to bring the caller in right now with Mr. Evans on who was the memo of understanding with. He explained that it was with parties and not the government. And I'm saying, but don't the government is the one with the power who can institute the agreements in general? But we can have that discussion because, like I said, I want to talk about the people who were against it, who are part of the labor union. But let me have this caller engage you first, and then you'll go. I'll go quiet, and then let you explain all of that. Okay. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us? This is Bernard Evans, who you're speaking with today. Call again once. Call again twice. Now call it gone. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mr. Evans.
Okay. At first, let me say this. At the time when the MOU was created, we had an input from every union affiliate. So there was no disagreement in the docking union that I know of. Okay? Now, after the Progressive Liberal Party, after the coalition, I think, endorsed, I don't know if the coalition ever came in and signed, but I know that we had received communication from them that they didn't have an issue with the document itself. We went through with the Progressive Liberal Party. We sat down, all right, and they laid out some difficulties that they had with some of the points that we had there. Some of the stuff they said, like, again, require legislative change, whatever. Some we knew was only to get started, at least the dialogue. Some we believe were low-hanging fruits that were addressed or what have you. But unfortunately for my Congress at the time when I was leaving, there was supposed to be a change in the leadership of the Congress. And we were supposed to go into our triennial elections. There was some difficulty there. And so that led to a division in the Congress while I was exiting. It's rather unfortunate. And so you had those parties who, saw that they would not engage because there was a split in the Congress at the time. And so that's what happened, and it gives this perception that some of the union was against the agreement. But we did have people who were saying that, because I think a party just said that if this was endorsed by the Progressive Liberal Party today, that they would get the support of the labor movement at that time, or those congresses at that time. And so it's all there for the record. And again, that's what I perceived that happened.
What did the Congress agree to in terms of support? I know what the government, the Progressive Liberal Party, agreed to, but what was the return, the quid pro quo, the exchange that the Congress said that it was going to do if this political party supported the initiatives?
Well, that's good. And even at the press conference, I think Mr. Ferguson said it, and again, he's not ashamed to say it, and I think we all endorsed it. We for those who for us at the time, that if you saw our concerns from the labor movement, and you were willing to make it a part of your policy had you formed a new government, that you would have our support.
Does the labor movement have an obligation or a duty of care to the broader public? I can see you saying, absolutely. We have a duty of care to our members, but do you have a statutory duty of care?
Absolutely.
Because you call on us all the time to support your labor rights.
And I'm going to tell you, yes.
But
absolutely.
Did the unions make the terms of the MOU public during the campaign during the campaign for the 2021 election? Because if this is an agreement between the PLP and the unions, right, then me voting for the PLP, like, why weren't the terms of the MOU published and made available, not just available, but as a part of the PLP's political platform?
Let me say this much, okay? That the document the press was invited at the sign of the document. I think copies of the document were dispersed to the press at the time. And so there was no hiding the document from anyone. And by the way, unions on the whole negotiate on behalf. When we negotiate for our members, by extension, we are negotiating for the wider working public. All right, and that's why I laid out some of the achievements of unions. While we fight for our members, we are essentially by extension and by natural, fighting for every worker in the country.
Okay, let me squeeze some of these callers in again. Producer Patch, all of them, if you can get through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Just make it quick with Bernard Evans. Call a girl once. Call a girl twice. Let's move on to the next one. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Erin. Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning.
Very interesting conversation here. Yeah. You know, especially for some of us who have been affiliated with unions in this country before, and in my particular case, the Bahamas Hotel Catering and Allied Workers Union, which, you know, there is a common thread through all of the unions,
yeah.
Whereas there are also the differences. I saw the line of questioning Erin was putting forward, and that's to the point that I wanted to comment on. You know, public discourse is so important into a lot of these things, even persons who aren't affiliated with the unions at all. I believe that unions would get a better support if the public, for whom, most unions depend upon, beside their membership, but the public support when they're fighting for certain things that should be instrumental in maintaining the union. The union strength in this country, I think it's important that information is shared. We shouldn't have to really depend on media houses to bring this information. But the union itself taking the initiative to come to the public, put their proposals out there in the open. There are bodies who are going to oppose, but then there are a lot of learned persons in society who, upon reading the document for themselves and having an understanding, plus asking the relevant questions, perhaps can also have an input. And once their input is taken into consideration, then you have a better support mechanism. But I'll close on this one point, Bernard, and you said it so succinctly, and that is, you know, we have to get away from showing some type of support to any one political party, per se, even the one that is in government at that particular time. You see, things in this country, if you notice, every time government changes, we have broken services, we have broken things. And to share this information with those who are even in opposition, because you don't know whether the current administration is going to retain governance after an election, but it goes over to the other party that is vying for leadership, that they too would have an understanding of what the union is trying to accomplish. And when I say the union, I'm talking about the umbrella of unions, what their objectives are, so there's that seamless transition across party lines, across government administrations, to continue to build upon what was already started. The sad part about this is, because of the political favoritism that happens in this country, everybody should be subjected to the same information, so there is a seamless collective that once you try to put something forward, there's that forward progression in moving the country, okay, and moving the union's objectives forward in a positive light. But okay, I just wanted to share that, and I applaud you and the union for actually encouraging and incorporating the other facets of political organizations into the dialogue or the conversations as it pertains to moving the things of the union forward.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Let me go quickly to this next caller so we can engage Mr. Evans again. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. Belinda Wilson here.
Hi, Ms. Wilson.
Okay, and good afternoon to your guests, but I need to clear the air on some things that I heard Mr. Evans just say.
Go ahead, I've given you time.
Okay, first of all, the Bahamas Union of Teachers was a part of the NCTUB, and in fact, we were one of the founding members. However, when Mr. Bernard Evans, who was our president, signed a memorandum of understanding with the now government, who was the opposition, the Bahamas Union of Teachers, and several other unions, we saw it on television.
What you mean you saw it on television? But you all had to be involved.
We saw the signing on television.
I'm going to ask Mr. Evans about it right now when you finish.
Man, listen, you had your time. Let me talk.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
The document was never, never shown to us. and there were about six unions. When we wrote our press release, we never said we did not agree with a memorandum of understanding or the tenets of the memorandum of understanding. Our problem was that our president signed a document on our, which he purported to be signing on our behalf, and we never saw it. That's what our issue was. And our second issue was that Mr. Obi Ferguson then turned it into a political issue when he said, we're going to vote for whoever is looking out for us. That's not our duty as trade unions. We are here to represent our members no matter what affiliation they have politically.
Thank you very much, Wilson. Let me allow Mr. Evans to respond to that.
And let me just, and let me also respond quickly. I do recall Mr. Evans saying that relevant representatives from various entities were aware, right? Yeah. So I just want to make, like, I want to make that distinction, because I don't feel that the it was sufficient, but at least he made a specific point, right? That there were specific people within the unions that saw the document.
You heard Ms. Wilson and her concerns. What is your response to that?
My response is this. My memory is a little bit different. I know that when we started we formed a committee and we asked for every affiliate to send us a representative and a designate to the formulation of this MOU from both Congresses. So I know from the NCTUB they were representatives, because we didn't have an issue at that particular time when we were at the genesis of formulating the MOU.
So you're saying
that is why I'm saying to you, no union have an issue with this document, this MOU, save for that one line that says that we would support the Progressive Liberal Party. In other words, that's the only issue I believe that came out of it. However, everybody knew about it. Now, as for the notification of the signing and stuff like that, like she said, she saw it on television, she may be absolutely right. But I do know that we made every effort to publish all of our affiliates that did the signing, because we wanted everybody to be there and to witness the signing of the document.
Now, members of the various unions may be okay with all of the terms except for one. What about members of the public? Because these agreements also impact people who are not members of unions.
Yeah, but
I have a couple of issues with terms in the agreement that I'd like to raise with you as well.
All right, can we get to
it? Like, no, you had a producer. We can get to it on the other side of the break.
Man, I hope we have enough time.
I
hope we have enough time.
Either the conversation in
the man I like to discuss
or commercial
this.
Break. Man.
I would like to discuss this.
Okay, let's make the commercial break quick, Wally, please.
It's me as a woman. We need to be moderated.
Be good. Let's go quickly.
Is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
One in every four Bahamians face some level of food insecurity. AML Foods remains committed to helping. And this year, through our Feed 5000 program, we'll donate $30,000 to provide holiday meals to families in need. But we need your help. From November 4th to December 18th, show your support and donate at the register at Solomon's, Costrite, Fresh Market, Exuma Markets, or Domino's Pizza in Nassau, Grand Bahama, or Exuma. Together, let's put an end to hunger.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM.
So I stand back, stand quick. I run out of time. Let's address Mr. Evans.
We need a part two, man.
Yes, we do. I can bring you back. Ask them two questions quickly, Aaron, so you have a rapid response.
Just to frame it quickly, while representatives from various unions may not have any issues with the terms in the MOU, members of the public have, and perhaps these issues may have changed their perspective on how they were going to vote if they were made public. So my first...
Why? Go on, ask a question.
I mean, this should...
Go, Ms. Green, ask
this,
a question.
Right, this document should have been a part of the Blueprint for Change.
Yeah, that's fine.
It should have been. Okay, so... Section 11 reads, the parties agreed that the PLP and government will supply to each umbrella unions a parcel of land for the building of their national headquarters. Why the government fundraising for y'all?
But do you mean the Passover line?
Yeah.
No, let's leave it at, that's not fundraising. What we did was, and I think this was a question or a request that go back at least 15, 20, 30 years.
But
that wait,
so hold on, y'all been collecting dues for 15, 30 years and y'all can't afford a down payment on the pizza line?
No, wait. Now, hold on now. You need to put this in perspective. The BCPOU have its acreage right there on Farringdon Road. The government didn't assist in getting that. The union, the individual unions have dues in their fund. The Congress is not set up that strongly. So the Congress don't have monies like that, like individual unions. So you'll find that what the AAAW, okay, the hotel workers, they get a Mistrocity on Harold Road or Tony Dallin Highway. So each union, BUT, so each union can do their own stuff, their finances do that. But the Congress itself don't really have that kind, because the Congress don't have the money. Any other entity, whether it's to assist, just ask for parcel of land.
But here's the question. If the Congress can't organize themselves to be able to obtain a parcel of land, how they could organize unions, how they could organize labor in the country, if y'all can't devise and sustain economic mechanisms to generate income sustainably, then
I just demonstrated to you that you have individual unions who are doing that and doing it successfully.
Yeah, but why can't the Congress?
But I'm saying, because the Congress is a different kind of animal, really. And so it's only asked. They asked for parts of the land. This is not new. This is asked of everybody and successful governments before.
Let's go to the next point. The next point, number third. Right. That's the parties agree to find ways to strengthen the financial sustainability of trade unions, including their ability to enter into international support agreements. Why does the PLP
or the government
will work to find ways to strengthen financial...
Yeah, let me tell you this, okay? And this is what we probably would not have time to get into, but since this MOU, all right, the government have saw fit, I've seen it fit to include the Congress at every level it can, deepening the democracy, carrying out the true tenets of what the ILO called for the full participation of worker representatives, government, and employer representatives. Just recently, last year at the ILO, for the first time in the history of this country, all three Congresses, all right, had representatives paid for by the government to facilitate in Geneva, Switzerland, to advance the causes of labor. They were even able to speak at the convention, at the plenary. And so the unions are there. And when we meet among our international affiliates and what have you, there are certain financial benefits that we could tap into, but because of legislative means, we cannot get access to those.
Okay, so I could see about policy that enables...
So that's what I'm speaking to.
Yeah, but to work to find ways to strengthen the financial sustainability of trade unions, including, there are other things that are on the table.
Listen, if we understand that the trade union movement is, or worker representatives, and that's another fallacy too, you know. I think we separate workers from union. We look at union as if it's separate in a box or in a vacuum. And then leave workers outside of those who are not unionized, Ms. Green. But the union spares everything for every worker, those organized or unorganized, okay? And so when you hear us saying that the government should help, because the government should aid us as a viable force, what would this country be without trade union?
What
would it be?
But what have you, I mean, look at what it is with trade unions. Let's make this assessment.
Let's speak to that.
Because in 2021, when the former Prime Minister Minnis got up and said, we urge employers to compel their employees to take the vaccine, there was barely a word from the union. Barely a word from the union express at the very least, sir, we appreciate what it is that you're saying, but could you say it in less threatening? Could you support the workers by not suggesting that their employers compel them to do something that the Nuremberg Code, is it the Nuremberg Code?
The government at the day, at the time of that day.
The statement was we urge employers to compel their employees to take the vaccine. Okay. If you're telling me that the unions, like you're saying, Green, these may seem extraordinary, but remember, we don't just represent the unionized. We also work for those who are not unionized.
Where were y'all when that statement was made? You're trying to convince me, a taxpayer, that
I should just be okay with this term. I may have been okay with this term if it were presented in the Blueprint for Change. But it wasn't presented in the blueprint for change.
But the blueprint for change was already, I think that was already started. But fine, that's fine. But you want to get onto the third one before? Because what I'm asking
number
to 20, get to is...
Number 22. The parties agreed that the PLP will be supported by the labor movement to become the next government of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
I think that was put there for every...
Wait.
Listen, again, this was sent to every political party of the day. If there were 10, there would have been 10
named?
Issuance.
Do you tell me?
Yes.
If there were 10 parties
yes.
that signed this agreement, hold on, 22 would have read, the parties agreed that the PLP, the DNA, the FNM, the COI, the BCM, the Bahamas Coalition Movement, that all of their names would have been listed here, and it would have continued to read, will be supported by the labor movement?
But I want you to know this, though. People have this tendency to believe that when unions speak to its membership and say, I want you to vote a certain way, that don't happen. You know? That do not happen.
So why say it?
You know, but I'm just saying, there was something that was put there. Everybody didn't agree with what's in it, but for it's a democratic process, and so what was put there? Carrier votes, and it was placed in there.
It appears as if...
I ran out of time, but you... hold on. But that's fine.
I appreciate you running out of time. We've been waiting 3 years to talk about this MOU.
Why y'all didn't call?
I did call multiple times. I've called multiple union leaders. I've invited
Mr.
people
Evans
on my show
is
to talk
here
about
now,
it.
Give me a part two then.
Definitely get a part two.
But
we have 4 minutes. But instead of asking you a question now, and I'm going to give you a part two so you can come back and we continue from where we left off and we'll analyze it some more. I give you the last 4 minutes to summarize.
Okay, let me summarize this. All right. The heads of agreement, by and large, at least I would say 90% of those stuff, the tenants, have been carried out. A lot of them are still a work in progress, and we expected that. Some of the things are low-hanging fruits, I believe, that could have been achieved, but due to certain things, they haven't happened as yet. So the current government have at least, another 20 months or 18 to 20 months, and hopefully we could get to the rest of it. Having said that, though, I am still proud of what the LRU was able to accomplish. You're talking about over 30 industrial agreements. If I were to put a peg, a number to it, you're talking about anywhere in excess of $40 million over the next 3 years that would end next year, June. That's now in the coffers of workers in the Bahamas that they can now hold on to. And this is nothing to sneeze at. When you think about the monies and the commitment made by government to uphold these agreements, this is something that needs to be sustained. It needs to be protected because if government change, it still has to continue. There's no rolling back. And we're talking about all facets of workers, and not to from the tea lady to the pilots, to the doctors, to teachers, to everybody in the public service, those in quasi, water and sewage, BPL, or what have you. And when people talk about unions, we form unions now today. In every crucial aspect of this economy, you find a trade union. All right? So we encourage people to come.
Where are y'all in terms of the taxi union? Y'all know the taxi union exists?
I just want to know if y'all know the taxi union exists.
Do y'all hear
know,
the things that they say?
I hear them. Listen. And that's another thing, too, you know. Every area of employment, you will find agitation. I believe right here at Guardian.
I don't know nothing about what's
happening. No, wait.
Let me tell you what I do know.
I do know. Wait, hold on.
What I know is the taxi drivers are out there acting like they've been deputized by the Governor General herself. They turn in right on red anywhere. They are, see, when we talk about the terms of this agreement and how it is set up, Bahamians feel like the unions have formed a special relationship with the PLP government that excludes Bahamians in various ways.
Okay,
so,
could I ask a question first? Let's take the PLP out of this equation. If you look at, and I want you to read the tenets of this agreement, do you think it's looking out for labor, particularly in the exclusion of workers?
No, I think that it is a poorly worded document. It was a good effort, right? But you needed more specificity to be able to realize the terms laid in the document.
And that's
one thing. The second thing is the way that the document was brought to realization, like forming it with one entity, is problematic. And then that undermines and destabilizes the potential of what is included in the document.
We thought every political party would have agreed with the Dennis Lewis agreement. That's what I thought. That every last one wanted to hold labor's hand and agree with these stuff that we talked about in here for the upliftment and protection of workers in this country.
I got to introduce you to some governments I know. You may not have never met them before, right. But after spending some time with them, you may have a change in perspective. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just the end of it?
Yes. I mean,
again, all unions, I ask you, if you have issues, again, to call me 477-2730. Anybody that have an issue, Minister Glover, she's available for anybody. And by extension, the Prime Minister is still open to anyone who would like to discuss any issues as they have been doing. And so we continue to work, and we look forward to a wonderful Thanksgiving today and to have more work to do and to continue to evolve as we deepen our democracy, Ms. Green, for the participation of everybody, including you. We want around the table to build this country.
Because I almost can't make it to work every day having to drive with taxi drivers on this road.
And this has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We're speaking to Mr. Bernard Evans, who's a senior consultant at Labor Relations Unit, at the Labor Relations Unit. We'll bring him back. We'll bring him back to interrogate this memorandum of understanding that the union had with the government. Guardian Radio AM, have a wonderful day.